equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon, I'm Carl Ettenayer, today's host for Equal Time Radio, and with you just about every Monday here at this time. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. If you're interested in following more on this topic, I've got a blog called Relocalizing Vermont. It's one of the many blogs at the Vermont Commons website. Just go to vtcommons.org/blog. Take up a lot of similar issues there. And the audio for this show is now, within about 24 hours or so of being on the air, is now at the Equal Time Radio website. That's equaltimeradio.com. So if you miss it live, you can download it there. Listen to the podcast. Got a great show coming up for you today. We're looking at the present financial collapse and wondering, is it a blip on the road to a high-tech future that's full of quantum computers, smart robots, and space tourism? Or are we seeing the beginning of the collapse of the U.S. empire with shortages of basic goods, a breakdown of government services, and a breakup of the United States of America? Or maybe both could happen at the same time. We're going to be talking with people with different perspectives on these issues. William Hallal, he's the author of Technology's Promise, Expert Knowledge on the Transformation of Business and Society. And then Dmitry Orlov, he's the author of Reinventing Collapse, The Soviet Example and American Prospects. And regular listeners to this show may remember that we had Orlov on back last summer or fall talking about that book shortly after it first came out. First, a couple calendar items for you. For those of you who are in the capital city area, Transition Town Montpelier on Wednesday will present a showing of The Power of Community, How Cuba Survived Peak Oil. This is a wonderful, less than an hour-long video about how Cuba got through the period of the 1990s, a so-called special period when the Soviet Union collapsed, speaking of today's topic, and left Cuba without its subsidized oil imports. So all of a sudden they had a lot less energy to work with. Interesting story about how they adapted. And to get a local and more updated perspective on what's happening these days, Ben Falk, who is with Whole Systems Design in Moortown, he was in Cuba a couple of years back, and he investigated the story of what's happened in the intervening years and how they've started using more energy. We'll hear his perspective, see some slides from his trip. That's 7 p.m. on Wednesday in Montpelier at the Kellogg Hubbard Library. 223-3338, I believe, is the number of the library if you want more information. 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And then on Saturday, it's a winter gathering for Haimoing organic seeds. This is for growers, February 28th, Saturday, 4 to 7 p.m. at their facility in Woolcott. It's a fun, free, and informative event that will provide an opportunity for growers to gather and learn more about vegetable varieties, the process of commercial seed production and distribution. Their founder and seedsman, Tom Stearns, will give an overview of seed production happening here in Vermont and afar, give a tour of the facility, a slideshow, and there's going to be a potluck get-together as well. So that's 4 to 5 p.m. is the the tour, 5 to 6 p.m. is a potluck, and 6 to 7 p.m. is a slideshow of Haimoing organic seeds, own seed production, as well as other seed producers in Vermont. So that's 76 Quarry Road in Woolcott is where their warehouse is located. And again, that's this Saturday, 4 to 7 p.m. For more information, call Haimoing Organic Seeds. That's 472-6174. Or just go to their website, HaimoingSeeds.com. That's HaimoingSeeds.com. And again, we're going to get back to our topic of the day about technology and its future in an uncertain society. We have on the line with us now William Hallal, author of Technology's Promise, Expert Knowledge on the Transformation of Business and Society. William, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carl. Good to be here.
Good to have you on. So you describe in this book the sort of crystal ball that you use, this method, highly iterative scientific method that you use to foresee future technological developments. Could you describe that for us?
We gather the best background information we can find on about 70 different technologies, just the most strategic ones that cover all fields. And then we have a panel of 100 experts around the world who work online. They look this information over, and they enter estimates on when they think each technology will enter the mainstream, the size of the economic market, and their confidence, and the system crunches the numbers. The forecasts are updated in real time and sent out to our subscribers. I think it's the best, I call it the best possible answer to tough questions. I don't know of a better way to do this kind of thing.
So you have experts involved in various fields, plus generalists in your team, who together make their own predictions about the involvement of these technologies that for most of us we're not even aware of, and that you get a sense of what's coming over the horizon.
Yeah, but they don't just work out of the blue. They have at their access the background information we provide, Carl, which I think makes this a big improvement over the normal method of this type that's called the Delphi method. This is a big improvement over the Delphi method.
The normal Delphi method, asking the
just expert... ask questions out of the blue. You know,
that's
when
right.
do you think this is going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we have all this wonderful background information that that goes a long way towards clarifying the status of these technologies, and it includes other forecasts that are found in the public domain. But there's always uncertainty. There's always uncertainty about these things. The prevailing forecast will vary wildly. And so the role of the experts is to resolve that uncertainty.
And how do you usually find the experts come down? Do you usually find that they converge on a common set of answers, or do you have, you know, what some people call a bimodal distribution, where some of the experts are in one direction and some are in another completely for the same technology?
Yeah, sometimes there is a bimodal distribution. Sometimes they differ quite a bit, their views, and sometimes they're quite united. And of course, experts all have their own bias. You know, nobody says that they're perfectly rational people, but biases are usually distributed normally, and so they wash out in the aggregate results. And we try to do this in a way that's intellectually honest, in the sense that we make a point of identifying the trends that are driving each of these technologies in the background information, as well as the obstacles opposing it. And right now, of course, we call to their attention the economic crisis and the effects of that.
Right, that's a big obstacle for development of a lot of corporations, but maybe not for technologies as a whole. I mean, you've written about how the dot-com crisis of the late 1990s really didn't slow down technological development in that.
Yeah, I think technology is relatively immune to a lot of these economic cycles, because the researchers, the scientists, the engineers continue to do their work. They're somewhat insulated from a lot of these things. They're funded by foundations or government agencies or corporations, and they're committed to their work, and so it goes on. Our continual scanning shows that there doesn't seem to be a discernible drop in the research going on. You know, this has been going on for, 5 or 6 months now, and I don't see any big decline in the research and development activities. And most entrepreneurs know that, or they presume that this is going to be a blip, and so they discount the current situation in favor of the long-term developments, and they're planning on that. Now, commercialization will drop off. That's true. The rolling out of new products may be delayed, but that just builds up pent demand. And so when the economic crisis lets up, and we think it's going to happen in about 3 years, we did a little separate forecast on the economic crisis, and our experts think that it's going to end about 2012. And so entrepreneurs discount that, and they're planning for the pickup that's going to occur about 2012.
We're talking with William Hillel. He's the author of Technology's Promise, Expert Knowledge on the Transformation of Business and Society. If you'd like to join the conversation about Technology's Promise, the number is 244-1777, or our toll-free number is 877-291-8255. And tell us about the business model behind this effort. I mean, it sounds like an effort that takes a fair amount of resources.
It's a lot of work. I've been doing this for 15 to 20 years. In the last few years, it's become successful, I think, in the sense that we now, we've been getting subscribers for about 2 years now. It's doing very well. There's value here. The forecasts are important to corporations, governments around the world, because they all have to plan for technological developments, and this is a convenient way for them to get the information. We also do consulting work. We just got a big $500,000 contract, so I'm really delighted that this little startup of mine that was just a gleam in my eye is turning into a serious little business.
What's the contract for?
I can't identify the client, but we're helping a famous university introduce a high-tech industrial park, and we're identifying the technologies that are most suitable for them to pursue and the companies that they should be thinking of partnering with.
The next Silicon Valley, perhaps.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And your website?
It is www.techcast.org, T-E-C-H-C-A-S-T.
Okay, and there you can find some information about your current projects, as well as a description of the experts who are involved in coming up with some of your forecasts.
Yep.
So I want to get back to this idea, this exploration of the intersection between what's happening in the economy and what's happening with technological development.
Right.
You said that what you've seen so far is that researchers are generally insulated from the current economic downturn. How much of technological development is reliant on the mass market for these technologies? I mean, Moore's Law is one that you cite as a doubling of the amount of information available on a computer chip every, 18 months or 2 years. It's been followed for decades now. How much of that is dependent on there being such a huge mass market for these computer chips, and how much would the research be driven anyway?
Sure. Well, I as I said before, I think commercialization may taper off temporarily, but the underlying development and research goes on. And I think the market will reappear. I know that it's certainly possible that this economic crisis could be devastating and it could go on for decades. And I'm looking forward to speaking with Dimitri about that. But I don't think it will. I tend to think it's more of a just simply, well, there are lots of ways to see it. In the limited sense, it's obviously the drying up of credit markets. That, I think, can be remedied in 2 or 3 years. And I'm pretty confident in the way the Obama administration is handling this. I like the way they're looking at all the aspects of the problem, the banks, the housing market, and so forth. That seems sound. It's going to be tough. But I think we will get through this in 2 or 3 years. The bigger problem is, I think, woven into all of this is the problem of sustainability, energy shortages, the damage on the environment, the conflict going on around the world, especially terrorism. That's the bigger issue that I think is a part of this. For instance, the problem with Detroit, the American car makers, that highlights very nicely the fact that the energy problem, that they don't have cars yet that are going to address the imminent change to non-carbon-based fuels. And so those problems are woven into this, and that is the bigger problem, what I call the global crisis of maturity. The world has to make a transition to a system that is economic, environmentally sustainable. And that's going to be tough. That's going to take about 20 years. But our forecasts also show that the big breakthroughs, the big initiatives in that area are likely to be tackled or likely to move into the economy, in mainstream economy, in 3 or 4 years. Green business is hot, and that is, I don't think that's going to be stopped. I think that's going to become very prevalent. And alternative energy, global warming, all of that, I think, is on the agenda. People know it. In fact, the economic crisis has served the very important need of calling attention to these problems that have been talked about for decades, but nothing has been done about them. Now it's no longer avoidable, and I think these things are going to be addressed. They are being addressed. People, I think, know that change has to be made, and they're starting to adapt to it with more conservative lifestyles.
There was a beautifully illustrated full-page piece describing some of the predictions coming out of your project, William Hall, in the Washington Post last month. And it described some of the technologies just around the corner being in the next decade as space tourism, intelligent cars, and telemedicine.
Yep.
Intelligent cars, I We have cars that talk to us right now. Some people like it, some people don't, and I can see that developing more in telemedicine, electronic medical records, and video conferences with doctors. I can see that continuing to develop. But space tourism, when we're at or near the peak in world oil production, energy is becoming more scarce. It seems like it takes so much energy to shoot a person off into space. That seems hard to reconcile. How do you think about that?
It is, but space is the final frontier. There's no question about it. And these are, Richard Branson, the owner of Virgin Airways, and now the owner of his new startup, Virgin Galactic. You know, I mean, this man thinks big. I think they're still working on this. He's intent on doing it. There's a market out there. I don't think that market has dried up. We're going to see the first suborbital flight with a dozen or two dozen tourists going into space for, won't be long, half an hour or so, but it'll happen in 2 or 3 years. And we forecast that a orbital flight will take place in 5 years or less. I think it's going to happen.
In a way, we already have space tourists, these people who spend $20 or $30 million and
to
give it to the Russians to go up and be in Mir for, I don't know how long they're there, a week or a month or something that.
Yeah, they were the pioneers, and now I think we're seeing the Wagoneers. These are going to be the Wagoneers. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like the Wild West. I like to use that comparison. Private space travel is opening up. And I know it seems like a luxury, it seems frivolous perhaps. Just 5 years ago, we were reluctant to include this on our system. We thought we didn't take it seriously. But we put it on about 3 or 4 years ago because we saw that it really is coming and it's going to be here. And I think it is a frontier. I don't see how we can ignore that.
We have a lot of people in our state who are struggling to heat their houses, struggling to get enough food on the table. What sort of social tensions do you think that's going to introduce if tourism takes off into outer space?
It could. You're right. We were at a dinner party the other night, my wife and I, we were talking about the economic crisis, and I observed that, there are no riots in the streets, so that's promising, and one of the people there said, there are no riots yet. He's right. Mm. I mean, this could happen. I tend to think that the American collapse that we're witnessing now is not going to be as severe as the problem the Russians experienced when Perestroika failed 15 or 20 years ago. I think there is a marked difference in the magnitude of what's going on. I don't mean to diminish what is taking place in this country. I mean, Americans started this, and we did it by creating market systems that were overextended and improperly supervised, and that were the result of really greed, I think, outrageous money that these people were making. But I think those things are correctable. The basic system is sound. The way I see it, the Soviet system failed because it was an over-controlled planned economy. And they had to invent a market system overnight. That is heroic. That was tough. But even so, they got through it in a decade or so. They had about a difficult decade, but they got through it. And the American system failed because it was an under-controlled market economy. But we're not going to move to a planned economy or anything like that. We simply have to learn how to control a market economy better, and I think we're going to do that.
William Hillel, author of Technology's Promise, you do kind of hedge your bets in this op-ed that you sent me last month. You said that a major turning point seems inevitable as these multiple threats reach critical levels over the next decade, the threats being energy costs, global climate change, economic collapse.
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any avoiding facing this. Globalization is clearly going to increase. I don't think this economic crisis is going to deter that in a significant way.
Let me finish reading what you wrote last month. I don't think we can muddle through as usual because the world seems poised at the cusp of a great discontinuity, much like a teenager when thrust into the passage to adulthood. Whether a teenager shedding the baggage of youth to become a responsible adult or a civilization facing the imperative to form a mature, functioning society, the imperative is much the same. Grow up or perish. So you're presenting both alternatives there, grow up and perish.
Yeah, that's right. We could fail. That's absolutely true. And I think that's the position that Dimitri may take. Mm. We could fail. And if we do, I think it's kind of back to the Dark Ages or something. I can't imagine reverting to an agrarian civilization. I think we are going to make it through this. I put the chances of failure to meet this challenge at about 20 to 30%. Mm. There's about 10 to 20% chance that we could do it beautifully without any great calamities. And the remaining 70% or so is what is likely to happen, and that is we'll get through it. It will challenge us. We will make mistakes. There will be big costs, but the world will get through it. And I think the time frame is about 10 years. 2020 is the point at which global GDP will roughly double. It may be a little later than that now that we've had this economic collapse, but I don't think it's going to be much later, because globalization is being driven by information technology primarily, and that is unrelenting, the advances in information technology. That's what's driving globalization. That's going to continue to take place. We also look at the 35-year cycles. That was in the op-ed that I sent you.
Right.
If you look at the stock market over a long period, you see these 35-year cycles. The economists call them the Kuznets cycles. The Great Depression of 29 was the end of a 35-year cycle. It was followed by the Eisenhower boom of the 60s, and that started in 45 when Eisenhower was elected, and it lasted 35 years until 1980. It ended, and then Reagan was elected, and it started the Reagan boom. We are now seeing the end of that Reagan boom, the focus on free markets and entrepreneurship and so forth, which was wonderful. It was needed. It was badly needed in response to the over-bureaucratization of society and big government. But now what we're in now is the end, the tail of that Reagan boom. And that's why we're seeing this big collapse, and we have to make an adjustment to a new form of economic system that'll be a modification of free markets. It's going to be a challenge to do that, and that's another topic we could discuss at some point, the new form of political economy that is likely to emerge. It'll be based, I think, on markets that are carefully regulated where necessary. And I think the corporation as a whole may become what I think of as a collaborative enterprise that cooperates with employees, customers, suppliers, and the public to make it a transparent system that doesn't focus exclusively on profit. That would, I think, and it wouldn't be just social responsibility, but it would be productive, a corporate community. It would be a more productive enterprise, and it would be transparent. Mm-hmm. And that would be a breakthrough. That would be an enormous breakthrough. Americans are perfectly situated to do that because it would be consonant with our traditions as a democratic society. We could, in effect, create a quasi-democratic corporation that's not socialism. So some people may be fearful of that, but it would really be simply democratic, and it'd be more productive and sustainable from an environmental point of view.
We've been talking with William Hallal. He's the author of Technology's Promise, Expert Knowledge on the Transformation of Business and Society. And you can read about his project at www.techcast.org, or go out and get the book at locally owned independent bookstores everywhere.